Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
The Tuesday edition of Sports Time Radio, and I'm the Big Jack, of course. And again, filling in for Dan the Man, we have Schomburg Stu here.
I'm back again, ready to have some great sports talk for the next hour.
All right, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need? Head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the new blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings, so you can look for a new one of those tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Sadly, we still haven't got Stu on Twitter. Maybe tomorrow we'll fire up an account for him. But you can find me at Burke Time over there, so definitely check that out. But you know, yesterday I was telling you, you know, I put together that FanDuel lineup, and I decided to take a shot. I was going to go with Doug Fister because he'd been pretty hot pitching for the Red Sox, right. And there was even some rumors that, you know, he was going to grab a spot in their pro postseason rotation. He crushed me last night. He lasted 2 innings. 4 hits, 5 runs, all earned, and walked 5 guys.
Not a great start for him last night.
Yeah, for points-wise, he gathered me a whopping -9, and my team still managed to score 125 points, so if he would have had a good outing, I could have really cashed in. Loading up against Matt Harvey worked out. You know, my two Marlins, one scored over 30, and Ichiro went for over 15. So, I had some good stuff, but yeah, you get a -9 with your pitcher, and yeah, you're done. So.
Yeah, I didn't know you can get negative points.
Yeah, they walks and runs, you know, earned runs are negative points, and if you don't pitch enough innings, those things really kill you. So,
and whatever. If a batter goes over four with 4 Ks, is that negative also? Or?
I believe they took the negatives away from the hitters. It used to be, last year it was negative 0.25. So if you went 0-4, you got a -1 on the night. But I believe they have eliminated that this year. It's just all positive for hitting. There are no longer any negatives. So only that's pitchers, and it's not even walks anymore. It's just earned runs are -3. So, you know, I guess they wanted to simplify things. But shaking off last night, we roll into tonight, and here's what I came up with. I'm going to go with Zach Godley of the Diamondbacks tonight as my pitcher. He's going against the Padres for $9,600. Sal Perez of the Royals is my catcher. He's hitting fifth for them tonight, cost me $3,100. Dominic Smith of the Mets is my first baseman. He's hitting cleanup, cost me $3,500. I spent a little money on Jose Altuve of the Astros. He cost me $4,000, but he's hitting third for them. Travis Shaw, the Brewers, is my third baseman tonight. He's in the cleanup spot there. He cost me $3,500. I also spent $3,500 on Carlos Correa of the Astros. He's hitting cleanup for them tonight, so I have the Astros double play combination going. In the outfield, another $3,500 guy. That must have been my theme around money. I went with Trey Mancini of the Orioles. He's hitting fifth for them. Then my outfield wraps up. I went back to Ichiro. He had a good night last night, and tonight he's in the leadoff spot for the Marlins. So I'm looking at getting possibly that fifth at bat. They did bump his price up to $2,200, so I had to pay $100 more, but it's Ichiro, and he's worth it. And then I round out with Gregory Polanco of the Pirates for $2,100. and he's hitting fifth. So my recap here, Zach Godley is my pitcher, Sal Perez is my catcher, Dominic Smith at first, Jose Altuve at second, Travis Shaw at third, Carlos Correa at short, and the outfield is Trey Mancini, Ichiro Suzuki, and Gregory Polanco. That, of course, is for the 605, what they call the main lineup. So you have about 59 minutes to get your lineup in and get it ready for that. So good luck tonight.
I was trying to do some mental math while you were doing that, and maybe I hope I was right. I came up, you spent around 35-3, but I don't know if I got all the
You know, I can double check real quick here and see what the budget actually is. It's definitely, it's right around there. I always forget off the top of my head what we're getting nowadays. This year they have us at, come on internet, don't be that way. Yeah, it's $35,000 to put your lineup together today. So, and I believe that's how it is on a daily, you know, a daily basis. So yeah, that's what you have to work with.
And you can't go over that?
No, you can't go over. It won't allow you to put players in once you've exceeded a certain amount. So it even, like, as you're finishing up your lineup, it even blocks out the guys you can't afford. So you can't even try to put them in your lineup. It won't allow you to, like, if you want to make a change, you got to go around and rearrange your entire lineup to get it, you know, get it done.
Well, this simplifies things for you at least.
Yeah, it's, you know, when we started getting into this, we looked at both sites. And Mr. Fantasy signed up for DraftKings, and I signed up over at FanDuel. And DraftKings at the time was really more complicated with the way they had their setup. And FanDuel was just kind of simpler and, you know, easier to work with. So we decided to, you know, to move over here and stick with that one. And I think, you know, it worked out, and, you know, we made the right choice there. So...
Wasn't there a talk of a merger at one time? I'm trying to remember about these.
Yeah, they actually started negotiations, and they were all kind of set to look at it. But then the Federal Trade Commission got involved because they were worried about it being a monopoly, because the only other really daily sports site out there is Yahoo. And I don't really think they're all that popular yet. You know, it's mostly, you know, anytime you hear it, you think DraftKings or FanDuel. And they tried for, might have been 6 months, to work out some kind of an agreement or some kind of deal. And then they just finally gave up because, you know, I mean, you know, once the government gets involved, you know, you're dead in the water anyways.
Right, that's true. Did they post the big winners eventually at the end of the season, or how people have done, the ones that really made big bucks?
You know, for some contests, you know, when they do their big thing where they're giving away, like I think week one for DraftKings, they had $1 million contest. And, you know, like they'll build commercials around who won that and how they do it. But for situations like this, like for the game I just got into, you'll only know who won by what the player's screen name is.
Okay.
So, yeah, so there is quite a lot of, you know, anonymity. And, of course, you know, the guys who are doing this for a living, you know, they have multiple accounts and they get multiple entries. And, you know, but that's their job. You know, I'm just a schmuck who enjoys doing it with, you know, for fun. That's why, you know, the rule is I never bet more than a dollar or two. You know, you're never going to see me in a $5 or a $10 contest or anything like that. Or, you know, some of them are crazy. You can bet hundreds or even thousands of dollars at a time. And that, yeah, not going to happen with me.
That's kind of risky, I think.
Do
they have the contest, you know, for the playoffs too? Do they have them for the playoffs for the NLCS and NLDS?
They did last year for, I believe, the early rounds. But as the teams kind of dwindle down, because you're only allowed to pick four guys from a team, so as the teams dwindle down, it's much harder and harder to make lineups, so it eventually kind of peters itself out. But by the time that happens, then it's basketball and hockey season, and you can just switch over to those.
Right.
So,
true.
You know, of course, football is still rolling along. So, you know, I know Mr. You know, week one of the NFL season, you know, Mr. Fantasy did quite well. He had multiple lineups out, and I think he ended up winning about 30 or 35 bucks on his, you know, dollar bets here and there. So he did well. I was, I have not been so lucky. I don't know what goes on with me in football, but, you know, I seem to, if I pick a guy, I just kind of kill him no matter, you know, no matter what it is. So
the kiss of death, huh?
Yeah, you know, yeah, for some reason, especially for football, you know, it's like I could get the best matchup and, you know, the guy would tweak an ankle or something in the first quarter and they wouldn't put him back in, you know, or just something weird like that always, you know, always kind of goes along with, you know, with my guys, and it's just, hey, great. You know, it's almost to the point where I think teams would pay me not to pick their guys.
Yeah, well, of course, that's the one sport where you have to be watch out for those things happening compared to the other sports.
Yeah, you know, I think I was telling you yesterday, you know, we had some fun. They had a bunch of penny and quarter contests on FanDuel over the weekend, you know, to draw a little bit going on. So I think I spent, you know, 5 cents or something and did 5 lineups. And oddly, the one that came out the best was the one of all the quarterbacks, the one I had the best came out was the one with Jay Cutler. So,
we'll figure. Huh?
Yeah, well, you know, it also helped that, you know, like I had Tampa Bay's defense in that league and, you know, the Bears didn't score anything. And, you know, Jason Witten had a good night, even though the Cowboys lost. But it was just kind of humorous because, yeah, the one quarterback who did, you know, end up on the lineup that topped all the other ones I did was good old Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
So
we'll see how he does for the whole season, though. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, you know, and, I give them a lot of credit. You know, they were in a crappy situation. You know, I mean, I think they've been in, you know, they were in California all week, you know, with the hurricane and everything that happened there. And then the night before their game, their starting linebacker wanders off. Nobody can find him, you know, and it's just kind of like, oh, okay, great. Here we go. And yet they still go out and they play, you know, San Diego's a good team in a tough division. And, you know, this year they're playing in a crappy stadium, but you know, I give Miami a lot of credit for being able to go in there, keep everything together and win that game. I don't know, you know, how they're going to do next week. I know their schedule is going to get ugly now with no bye week and they have to make that trip to London and then still come back and play. So it's not going to be fun.
No, it won't be easy. That trip is, I don't know why they do that. That's what, 6 or 7 hour trip to London to do that. And it's got to really cause havoc on the team. You got that, time differential, a 6 hour time differential between here and London, Chicago and London, it's a 6 hour time difference. It's a good thing they don't go to Australia. That's a 15 hour time difference.
Yeah, well, you know, and obviously normally the NFL is really fair about it, and when you go to London you get your bye week the next week.
Right.
But obviously the Dolphins gave up their bye week with the hurricane. So you know, they're not going to have, you know, them and Tampa Bay won't have a bye week. They're going to play 16 straight weeks. You know, and while we were talking about London, the first game is actually this weekend. The Ravens and the Jaguars play in London this Sunday. So it's already showed up and it's going to roll along here. So.
And that'll probably be a close contest, most likely.
Yeah, I noticed the London games are kind of weird. Either you get the giant blowout or you get a 3-point game. You never seem to get kind of a middle of the road type of game there. It's only one or the other. So, I know they list the Jaguars as the home team, but I'm not thinking that's really much of a home field advantage there.
No, not at all. But they usually draw pretty well those games.
Yeah, well, you know, I think because there's so few of them, you know, it's still kind of an attraction there. You know, I mean, because I know, you know, the NFL have been talking about doing it more and more. I think if they were to try to do one game a week there, it would get a little flat and the attendance wouldn't be as good.
Probably not.
But I did find it humorous. I don't know if you caught this stat, but on on Sunday, the attendance for the Rams game and the Chargers games, you know, the two teams that, you know, we had to have an NFL team in LA, their combined attendance didn't match what USC, the college team, drew on Saturday.
Well, that's an embarrassment. Yeah, I think I remember seeing that their attendance was not very good. Yeah, of course, the USC
stadium,
though.
Yeah, you know, the NFL has actually really struggled out of the gate here with attendance, and I know even ratings are down a little bit. You know, it is just week two, so it's not really panic time or anything yet, but it, you know, it gives the media something to talk about, and, you know, they like to, you know, they would prefer to report negative than positive anyway, so, you know, if they can find something like that, they're going to be all over it.
What's your thought about why that's happening now, the reduction in attendance in the NFL?
Well, you know, I mean, especially early now. I mean, if you're in the right, you know, the right part of the country, or even probably pretty much everywhere, if the weather is nice, you know, why do you want to go be cramped up in a stadium at this point where there's so many different ways to see the game? You know, you could be outside and stream the game and still watch it, you know, especially if you've got a family. I mean, you know, imagine paying for you, your wife, and two kids to go to an NFL game, and then you've got parking, and, you know, if your kids are young, they're going to want a souvenir. You know, you're paying $500.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt about it.
Yeah. You know, I think more and more with the way the NFL is played, it's becoming a kind of a made-for-TV game, unless you have great seats. You know, I could never imagine. I know my buddies used to go to the Bears games, the Bears playoff games all the time in, like, January when it was negative whatever, and they would sit way up top. And, you know, they never really understood why I didn't want to go. And it's like, well, I can stay warm, be at home, I don't have to pay for my beer, and I can see the game better than you can from where you are. So, I mean, yeah, unless you've got quality seats, I can see these people not wanting to go to NFL games.
Do you remember when the games were blacked out in Chicago? You go, before your time. You do remember that?
Yeah.
And you have to get we got an antenna one time and try to get, pull in, I forgot, I think it was Channel 22 in South Bend. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But one day, I'll tell you a quick story, when the Bears still played at Wrigley Field, it was coming in perfect by our house. Perfect, I mean, beautiful picture. And I got a call from a buddy of mine. I got an extra seat for you for the game at Wrigley. So I said, what yard line? And he said, well, you'll get there. I'll tell you when you get there. I said, okay. I took a chance, grabbed the car, drove to the L, end zone seats. And it's almost impossible to tell what's going on the other side of the field. Impossible.
Yeah.
I could have stayed home and seen it perfectly because the reception was great that day. And he talks me into going to the game, and it's the end zone seat. And believe me, when they're playing at the other end of the field, you have no clue as to what's going on.
Yeah, right before I was born and kind of ruined his life, my father had actually had Bears season tickets, and his seats were in the end zone. You know, he had the two seats there, and he was there, and I'm drawing a blank on the year. It might have actually been 65, but they beat the Giants. I believe it was for the championship. And I don't know if it was, I'm not sure if it was a game-winning field goal or an extra point or something, but the ball actually landed on him, and there were so many people on top of him that he couldn't keep the ball, and he ended up losing it. So somebody else got the ball, but it landed right in his lap, and it was just, you know, I mean, it was a mugging after that. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that in stands and stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know,
I believe,
it was
by
just,
the way,
he just, you know, he couldn't.
I think it was 1963, by the way. I think it was 1963, and how's this for trivia? I think Y.A. Tittle was the quarterback for the Giants, and the Bears won 14-10. if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, because I remember for the longest time we had the program. You know, he had put the program away so we could hang on to that because, you know, the Bears haven't won very many championships. I think the next one was 1985 or whatever that was.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, once the Super Bowl started, the Bears stopped winning. Before there was a Super Bowl, they used to win quite a bit. But, yeah. So
yeah, I remember that game very well. And, boy, it was blacked out, by the way, in Chicago, that game. The championship game, believe it or not. And the reception that day, of course, was horrible.
So, yeah, you know, lots of, you know, God, I remember that used to be the NFL's thing, was to black games out in home markets. You know, it was a little bit of the strategy. You know, the Blackhawks used that for how long when the old man Wirtz was still alive. You know, his theory was if you showed the game in the city, people wouldn't come to it.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
how long that is nowadays, huh? Now, that doesn't hold when, in fact, the Blackhawks, right? Every home game is televised. Every game's a sellout.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Bulls. Same thing with the Bulls.
And obviously, you know, like with the Blackhawks, winning helps. You know, once you start to win, your attendance always seems to improve. You know, I know we talked about it a little, you know, when the Cubs were at the end of their rebuild, their attendance was just starting to drop, and then the team turned it around, and now, you know, you couldn't get a seat there if you wanted to. So,
no.
You know, yeah, that's the one thing. Winning always kind of cures those ailments.
Winning helps. The Cubs were so bad. I think I told you this, that one year they were well below a million in attendance, if you can believe that. That team, that's how bad they were. Well below a million. Just embarrassing. I don't think we'll see those days anytime soon.
So, yeah, no, you know, they're set up to succeed for, you know, the next few years at least. You know, obviously they're going to have to do some work on bringing in some younger guys to kind of replenish as things move along. But, you know, we'll see. But, you know, since we kind of got off on baseball, you know, there are a couple, you know, interesting series rolling here. You know, I know the Twins and the Yankees, the Minnesota is visiting New York. They're going to get started in about 35 minutes or so. And then, you know, the Angels are hosting the Indians. The Indians obviously have been the best team in baseball for a few weeks now, ranked off that winning streak and all the other stuff. You know, for teams like, you know, I guess you could throw the Yankees in there as well, but for, you know, the Yankees, the Twins and the Angels, is this kind of, you know, make or break? Cause you know, we're running out of games. Now, you know, the Yankees are the wild card leader. You know, Minnesota is the team that's hanging on to the second spot right now, but the Angels are just a game and a half back.
Even kind of,
you know, so obviously the Angels, Cleveland,
no
the Angels can't have Cleveland come there and just blow them over.
But yeah, I mean, Cleveland could rest their regulars as they want now. And, but we know that could backfire on you.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, I mean, you got to worry about the Angels. You know, with a team like Cleveland coming in there, you know, you just don't want to, you know, get you know, run over, you know, with them rolling in. And you know, I know the Angels have done well, and I haven't been sold on their, you know, they're pitching. I mean, tonight I got to double check it here to make sure I got the name right. But you know, tonight they're going with I went past it. There we go. It's Tyler Skaggs tonight, who I don't believe has made too many starts this year because he's been out injured. Let me double check all the fun stats here. It looks like he made two starts and then went on the DL and came back in August. So it looks like he's only pitched in 13 games this year. You know, but he's their guy. I mean, he's supposed to be kind of one of the, you know, the young guys they're building around. He's just 26, but you know, looking at his player card here, he's been injured quite a bit. He pit, you know, this will be his 14th game tonight. He pitched 10 games last year, missed all of 2015 with an injury, and pitched 18 games the year before that. So he hasn't exactly had a full season. You know, do you worry that, like, a guy like this is going to break down in a pennant race, especially with the added pressure?
Yeah, it's been known to happen. And are they assuming he's going to go for 5-6 innings tonight? I guess that's their best shot that they're considering.
Yeah, I would assume 5 is probably what they're looking at. If they can get 5 innings out of him, they would probably be pretty happy. So, you know, now tomorrow at least, you know, they got the veteran Ricky Nolasco going. You know, so he's kind of a solid guy. And I think, are they off on Thursday? Oh, no, there we go. They got the afternoon start on Thursday is Parker Bridwell, who's been a bit of a surprise this year for them. What I did notice looking at the schedule is all of a sudden the good old ESPN is back on the bandwagon. They're showing 2 games tonight, and then tomorrow they're showing 3. So I guess it's pennant race time or something, huh? Because they're all in on the bandwagon.
Did you notice, speaking of pennant race, did you notice that the Cub game with Milwaukee on Saturday almost always is a night game, is an afternoon game? I wonder if that's because it's a nationally televised game. Is that going to be on Fox?
Yeah, I was going to say, did they grab that one? I don't know. You know, I'm not sure if they do. They have they don't really have the flex scheduling like football does at the end of the year there. But yeah, maybe they put it there. I mean, it would make sense. I mean, that would be a team or a game you would want to see nationally televised. I mean, it's basically going to be for the division. You know, if Milwaukee could find a way to sweep again, you know, they would be right there back in it. I don't think they'll manage to do that this time, but we'll see.
Yeah, and because they're almost always play at night on their Saturday games, the Brewers. And I was very surprised to see that. It has to be a nationally televised game. It's starting at noon. That's even different than the
Yeah, it would surprise. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I know. You know, sometimes the MLB Network will carry an early game on Saturday before the Fox game, so maybe they're carrying it, or they don't have any listing here on if anybody's carrying it yet, but of course it is only, Tuesday, so we're way early in the week for anybody to kind of reach that far out. But yeah, who knows? It would definitely make sense.
Right. If it is a Fox game, it's good news for me at least.
Yeah, that's good news for everybody.
Yeah, we don't have to listen to Lennon JD. But we must be in the minority. Everybody seems to like them. What about Mr. Fantasy and Bill? Are they fans of Lennon JD?
Yeah, well, Dan doesn't like him. You know, he's kind of on board with us. And Mr. Fantasy is a White Sox fan, so I don't think he actually watches Cub games.
Right.
So, he's just kind of he's on the outside looking in there. So,
yeah, I'm sure he loves to listen to the Hawk call the games.
Yes, of course. How can you go wrong with Hawk Harrelson, right? So,
right. But not much longer, though.
No, well, it's weird because they keep saying that, and then yet he continues to, add games. What's he doing, 20 next year?
20, I think, yeah.
Yeah. But
there is one park. There's one park he said he will never go into again.
Yes, thank God. Oh.
no more Wrigley Field for Hawk. He really hates the press box there and everything else.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of people don't like the press box there. I've heard guys complain on the radio about that. The media complain, but that's nothing new with those guys. They're the same guys who complain the games are too, really, really got the movement going that the games are too long. So.
Yeah, sometimes those games can go on and on. You can a 4-hour game and it's not extra innings, which happened, I think, Sunday. It was close to 4 hours before it was said and done. And it was a 4-3 game. It wasn't a slugfest. It was not a slugfest by any stretch of the imagination. And the game almost took 4 hours, very close to being maybe 340, 350.
Yeah, you know, it's weird how some games, you know, it'll be like, man, you know, this game's never going to end. And then other games just kind of move along and they breeze right through without a problem.
Yeah, I think it depends on how many strikeouts there are and how many foul balls there are in a game. That could slow things down quite a bit, especially a foul. If it's 8 or 9, 10 pitch at bat, and that goes on and on and on, the games are going to drag.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, of course, you know, if there's multiple pitching changes or trips to the mound or, you know, those kind of things that go on, you know, that's always gonna slow down.
A lot of factors.
Here, you know, I was clicking on some stats, and I think I came across something that I know I didn't know. I'm gonna guess you probably didn't know it. Do you know that Avisail Garcia, the White Sox, has the second highest average, not only in Major League Baseball, but obviously in the American League?
Well, I know he was in the top five. I think he was, the last I checked, he was around 330 or so. I don't know what it is now, but it was pretty high. He's had a terrific year.
Yeah, he's actually been. Yeah, he's hitting 333. The only guy ahead of him is Jose Altuve. He is just 1 point ahead of Charlie Blackman, so I don't know. But, yeah, I didn't realize. I knew he was doing well, but I didn't realize he had had that good of a year. So I was a little surprised there.
The White Sox had a big offense last week or so. They were scoring 15, 16 runs a game, several games.
Yeah.
He had some big games. Wasn't he 5-for-5 or 4-for-5 a couple of those games? And that really helped his batting average.
So, yeah, well, you know, you got to take advantage of those situations, right? So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, like I said, I was shocked. I didn't realize he was doing that well. So.
Oh, yeah. I know he's fairly high. It's hard to believe that that's the highest average, though. What is Altuve's average?
348.
348. Well, I think of what Ted Williams wound up with some years. That seems pretty low by comparison. But the averages have been low.
Yeah, you know, I don't. Yeah, well, you know, that's because of the new way, you know, the game is played where average doesn't mean much anymore. And I know, you know, even when you win a batting title, they demean it so much that it doesn't really mean anything. I mean, it used to be a great accomplishment. Now it's, you know, they basically crap all over it when you win one.
There was one year, I forgot which league it was, but it was theoretically possible almost until the very last week of the season that the winning batting average would be below 300. But I think
I remember that. I don't know what. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember the year, but I think they wound up with 302, 303, just barely over 300 for the batting title, which is really something.
Yeah, well, yeah, especially when, you know, guys used to win it at, you know, 370 and 380 and you know, but, you know, of course, you know, pitching has improved, and now, you know, you face a lot of different guys. And then, of course, yeah, you know, with the changes to the way hitting is taught and preached, and, you know, where strikeouts don't matter, you know, you're not, you don't get as many two strike hits because guys aren't shortening up and looking to put the ball in play. They're still looking to hit it out of the yard.
I'll tell you what to me is an impressive accomplishment. You know, Ted Williams is out of action. I think he was in the Korean War for 3 or 4 years. He's a pilot. And after being out of action for, 3 or 4 years, he came back. I think he hit 380 or 390 his first year back after all that time away with the military, which is an amazing accomplishment. That guy was just an unbelievably great hitter.
Yeah, you know, and you wonder if, you know, he would hold a lot more records if he didn't give those 3 years away, you know, where he would be.
Sure.
So,
to come back after that 2 or 3 year lag to hit that high, it's just staggering. And he was not a punch and Judy hitter either. He hit the long ball.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was. Yeah. He was a true power hitter along with you know, everything else, which you don't, you know, now you don't get a combination like that much anymore.
No.
Now, you know, I did hear, you know, something interesting today. Yesterday I was kind of building my FanDuel lineup, and I wanted to make sure I got a couple guys in against Matt Harvey. And, you know, that worked out for me because really stunk again. And it, you know, it kind of got me thinking, you know, 2 years ago, the Mets went to the World Series, and, you know, it looked like this team was going to be a dynasty. You know, they had Matt Harvey, they had Jacob DeGrom, they had Noah Syndergaard, they had Steven Matz, and then, you know, they were going to get Zach Wheeler back. You know, I believe, didn't they sweep the Cubs that year? Was it 2015?
2015, 4-0 in the NLCS.
You know, yeah, and I mean, it looked like, you know, they were just going to pitch their way to, you know, everything. And now you look at the team, and with the exception of DeGrom, who's having a really good year this year, Harvey's made 17 starts. He's 5-6 with a 6.59 ERA. Wheeler's made 17 starts as well. He's 3-7 with a 5.21 ERA. Matt's only made 13 starts this year. He's shut down, 2-7 with a 6.08 ERA. And Noah Syndergaard's only made 5 starts. He was 1-2, but his ERA was 3.29.
Terrible.
You wonder what the hell happened to this. Yeah, I mean, this was a vaunted pitching staff that was going to win multiple Cy Youngs and lead the Mets to World Series title after World Series title. What went wrong?
Done. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. I think Harvey's done. I mean, he looks like he's done. And maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am. But, boy, he did not look very impressive when he pitched against the Cubs. It just injuries are just terrible.
Yeah, well, he didn't look impressive last night either. So
no, that's right. You mentioned that, but he looks.
Yeah.
I don't know. Of course, he's collecting his money. What does he care? But he's a competitor too, and he just doesn't look like he has much left in him.
Yeah, you know, I'm wondering if the proverbial change of scenery helps a guy like that. You know, get out, because he was still throwing 90 plus last night. He just couldn't locate, and he was getting rocked all over the park. You know, and I mean, as you know, you've seen enough baseball to know any major leaguer can hit a straight 90 mile an hour fastball. You know, you're not going to get anybody out like that. So, you know, maybe, you know, a new look or somebody, you know, somebody shifts him a little, or just a tweak in his delivery, and maybe he bounces back. But, you know, like, you know, you pull up a guy like Zach Wheeler, who I think missed 2 years. He missed 15 and 16 because of Tommy John, but he came back and he's a bust. You know, he's nowhere close to being able to fill a rotation spot. I think Matz has been hurt off and on the last 2 years. You know, I mean, this went from, you know, a staff that was going to be led by aces to, well, you know, okay, we got Jacob DeGrom, who made 30 starts. I guess we rely on that. I don't know.
Terrible period. Have the Mets made any kind of change in their pitching coaches over the last few years?
That I don't believe so, but it's looking more and more like we're going to get a clean sweep this year. You know, it looks like this is going to be Terry Collins' last year. He almost didn't come back this year anyways. So you've got to wonder if, you know, he'll even bother. He'll probably just walk away.
Yeah, it's house cleaning time for the Mets. And as you mentioned, boy, when you think of 2015, the National League champions going to the World Series, and now look what they are now, just completely destroyed as a team.
So, yeah, they have the Mets pitching coach listed as Dan Worthen, and I believe he was there last year. Let me see if I can find any issue here. Yeah, he's actually been the pitching coach for the Mets since 2008.
Been there quite a while. Wow. Running on 10
yeah,
years.
Yeah, so.
10 years, huh? That's a long time.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know what I mean? Obviously, you know, injuries play a big part of their struggle. I mean, you know, again, it's only 17 starts for Harvey, 17 for Wheeler, 13 for Motts, and then just 5 for Syndergaard, you know, who still was regarded as one of the top pitchers. And when you look at his stats, you know, even in 5 starts, he went 27 and a third innings. He struck out 32 guys, only walked 2.
That's pretty good.
So you got to figure if they can just get him right and get him healthy, you know, and he can make his 30-plus starts next year. And,
right.
You know, DeGrom has been pretty good. You know, maybe, you know, they could kind of rework it and rebuild it and still accomplish something out of it. But, you know, this is 2 years in a row now where this pitching staff is just literally falling apart.
Well, we've talked about this before, but why are so many pitchers breaking down now? With all the modern medicine and the technology and everything else, it seems like there are more breaking down now than ever before, and I can't figure out why. They protect them so much. I just can't understand it.
Yeah, you know, and I almost wonder if the protection is part of the problem, you know, because they limit you so much. You know, when you're coming through the system, you know, I mean, like you get into Class A and they're like, okay, you know, we're only going to allow this guy to throw X number of pitches or so many innings. Okay, so, you know, he does that and then he gets to the next level and, you know, they're like, okay, well, you know, we're going to, you know, we're going to allow him a little more and then just a little more. And, you know, but by the time he gets to the majors, I mean, guys aren't ready to go 7, 8, 9 innings like they used to be. And I just don't understand it. I know I heard one team, and I can't remember who it is, but they were talking about doing a setup where you would have your starter, and they were going to do this in one of their minor league classes, and he would come in and he would go, you know, 5 innings, and he would hit his pitch limit. And then they would bring in another starter and try to get the final 4 innings out of him with his pitch limit. And it's just kind of like, okay, so it's going to be 2 starters per game is how we're going to do this.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it would make much sense when you think about it, because they're using all your starters and you'll use 8 starters in 4 games.
So, yeah, you know what I mean? Obviously, you would need to carry a whole lot more starters. I mean, you know, granted, it you know, and then it's just kind of like, well, okay, what if somebody has a bad start? You know, I mean, what if you have a start like Doug Fister last night where you only go 2 innings? How do you make up the rest of those innings?
Yeah, you just don't. Unless the second starter pitches 6 or deep
into
the game.
So, yeah, it's you know, I mean, you know, I kind of think they're looking at this the wrong way. But then I remember back when Nolan Ryan took over as president of the Texas Rangers. And one of the things he wanted to do was he actually said he wanted to teach kids how to pitch deep into games again. And he caught so much flack for that. You know, about how, oh, you know, you're going to injure all your young arms and, you know, you're going to ruin these kids and all this other stuff. And it was like, really, he's just teaching them how to pitch. You know, I mean, what's wrong with going deep into a game? I just don't understand it.
Marshall always says that he could teach anybody how to pitch with longevity. Awesome. Very few pitchers now are pitching the right way. Yeah, maybe he had a point. Maybe he has a point.
Yeah, oh, God, and I mean, you look at a guy like Marshall, I mean, he was a reliever who pitched, I think the 1 year he appeared in over 100 games. you know, as a relief pitcher. And, you know, that's when they pitched multiple innings when they went out there. It wasn't this, you know, okay, well, I got to get one batter out. No, you had to get, you know, 3, 6, 9 guys out.
Yeah, he was impressive, certainly impressive. So he has a right to, he has a staff to pick up, to back up what he says. But you don't see too many. I wonder if how many people actually try his methods.
Yeah, here in 1974, he pitched in 106 games for the Dodgers. He was 15-12 with a 2.42 ERA, and he saved 21 games on top of it.
That's an incredible stat. That's really an incredible stat.
So,
I think we're safe in the
you know, I mean,
it's not going to happen anymore like that, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I know there are some guys who get to like 70 games or 75 games, but a lot of times it's just that left-hander who comes in to face a left-handed batter and then he's out of the game immediately. So even though he's been in 75 games, his inning total is like 60 innings pitched, where Marshall in this year pitched 208 and a third innings.
Yeah, that's a tremendous amount.
So, yeah, I mean, just unbelievable. I mean, looking at his stat page, like the year before he appeared in 106, he appeared in 92 games. Then, you know, a few years he didn't appear in that many, but then back in 79, he pitched in 90 games again.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, you know, you wonder, you know, and, you know, obviously, you know, he never had arm trouble or anything like that. He was always able to go and, you know.
Yeah, didn't Mark Pryor have perfect form too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Remember, he was the guy who had the perfect delivery and would never have arm problems.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Whatever happened to that guy?
Well, you know, I know he bounced around the minors for a while. Oh, here you go. You'll get a kick out of this. Do you know most that Mike Marshall was ever paid in a season was $300,000?
That was it, huh?
Yeah, imagine what a pitcher, you know, if there was a pitcher out there who could do what he does now, imagine what that guy would make.
Yeah, incredible amount.
You know, just one of those things. But here, I can tell you, let me see if I can find it here. I believe, let's see, Mark Pryor pitched the last record we have, 2013, he threw 7 games in the Reds AAA organization.
Didn't he go with try Boston too? Wouldn't he try?
Yeah, that was 2012. He pitched 19 games for Boston's AAA team. 2011, it looks like he split some time between the Yankees and Minnesota. So. Yeah, he bounced around the minors 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013 is, you know, where when he tried to make the comeback after leaving the Cubs in 2006.
It's a sad story, really. It's a shame that he had those kind of problems.
So, yeah, you know, it's just one of those things, just you wonder why or how it worked out, but, man, it, you know, he's going to go down as one of the biggest busts in baseball history.
Yep.
So, you know, and I mean, he did have a winning record with the Cubs. He 42-29 in the, 5 years he pitched there. So.
Yeah. Over 500, huh? At least.
Yeah. You know what I mean? His ERA was good. He was 3.51, you know, so his numbers were really solid, but, you know, he just couldn't stay healthy. You know, he only made 30 starts one time in his career.
Yeah, it just could not the perfect form. So we could throw that theory out the window.
So, and you know, yeah, just one of those things. You know, and to the, you know, to the contrary, you know, I told you about Mike Marshall. In 2006 with the Cubs, Mark Pryor made $3.65 million.
And that was a couple of years after the El Fuldo for the Cubs against the Miami.
Yeah, well, you know, he not only did he make he made $3.65 million to pitch in 9 games that year. So,
yeah, it didn't work out well for the Cubs. Worked out well for him, though, at least.
But,
I hope he was able to invest his money wisely.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, he was, you know, he was the number 2 pick in the draft by the Cubs back in, you know, 2001. And, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, we, you know, Dan and I think talked about it a week or two ago. It's difficult to draft pitching that high because, you know, you just don't know.
No, no, it's a crapshoot, real crapshoot.
So, you know, and Pryor was, you know, just another one of those guys. You know, I mean, you look at it and it's a bunch of, well, you know, he could have been this. And that's the thing, you know, you wonder if, you know, is Matt Harvey going to be added to that list? You know, it could have been this.
Right. Well, maybe the Cubs went about their drafting in the right way then and kind of stayed away from pitching for the most part and tried to sign position players. Matt, it's worked out well for them so far.
Yeah, well, you know, and I mean, that was part of the issue, you know, like, you know, now everybody kind of forgets because, you know, the Houston Astros are doing so well. It took them a lot longer to get here than it was supposed to. You know, they were supposed to be here a year or two ago. They started their rebuild a year ahead of the Cubs, and yet the Cubs got there first. So, you know, you do have to question, you know, they selected some pitching while the Cubs went all hitting. You know, the Astros did reach out and grab some, you know, some pitchers when they were trying to rebuild this. And, you know, sadly it, you know, I don't think they worked out at all. I want to see, I'm trying to remember the one guy's name. I got to look it up here because I screwed it up. Yeah, here you go. Well, here in 2013, they drafted Mark Appel. He was the first pick in the draft. And, you know, he was going to be the guy they were going to, you know, they were going to build it all around. You know, he was the guy. And they, you know, they took their time with him. You know, they didn't rush anything. And yeah, I don't think he ended up pitching for them. I believe they finally gave up on him and dealt him away.
And
so,
still in the minors.
Yeah, that's what I've got. I believe he is coming back from injury, and I want to say I think he ended up going to the Phillies. I gotta double check here and make sure everything is on. Yeah, he's with the Philadelphia Phillies right now. And let's see. Yeah, he's currently, yeah, he pitched 2 games in their rookie league before going to AAA. He's made 17 starts in AAA this year. He's 5-4 with a 5.60 ERA.
Not too impressive.
Yeah. So, you know, and again, he was, you know, excuse me, he was the 8th overall pick that year. Sorry. I thought, for some reason, I thought he was number 1. But, you know, the year after that, they grabbed another pitcher, too, by the name of Brady Aiken. They were unable to sign Aiken because when they gave him his physical, he ended up having some arm trouble. So they never signed him. So they made a first round pick that got continually injured in 2013 and didn't work out. And then the next year they drafted a guy they couldn't sign. So, you know, they kind of got nothing out of that. And now, you know, these picks are sandwiched by names you're going to know. The 2 years before that, it was George Springer and Carlos Correa. And the year after Brady Aiken, 2015, was Alex Bregman.
Hmm.
So, you know, you've got these guys surrounded, you know, and of course, what's the what's the deal there? Well, they're all hitters.
That's the answer.
So, you know, and I mean, I get it. You know, you see those guys and, you know, it's like, oh, okay, you know, this guy's he's a can't miss, you know, prospect. You know, there's no doubt about it. And I know, like, this year the Reds took that Hunter Green, I believe his name was, and they had decided, they're trying to decide if he was going to be a shortstop or a pitcher, and he's decided that he's going to be a pitcher. You know, so it'll be interesting to see how they did. You know, the Padres right behind them with the third pick took a guy by the name of Mackenzie Gore, who, you know, now these guys were both high school pitchers. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, they develop or how they shake out. I mean, if you have the system to do it, you know, then you can, you know, you can do these things. But if if for whatever reason, your system isn't that strong or however it works out, you know, then we're looking at, you know, these guys are busts. You know, we drag these guys up and, you know.
Well, pitching and defense win games. That's a given. But there's still something about signing a everyday ball player who doesn't have to come in and pitch every five games. You got a guy who can come in every day and see if he can do the job for you. It's interesting. Interesting how these selections are made.
Yeah, you know, and then, you know, and like on the other side, you know, on the other side of town, you know, the White Sox picked up Carlos Rodon. Yeah, Rodon,
yeah,
however
Rodon.
We want to say it. Right. You know, I believe it was the first round of the 2014 draft. And, you know, he came through their system very quickly, and he's looking like he could be a guy who could develop into a top of the rotation starter. Of course, the big key for him, you know, has been health.
That's exactly right.
So, you know, you got to wonder.
Shut down this year, right? He's already shut down for this
year.
Yeah,
they shut him down after he got he started off the season hurt. And then, he had I don't remember if it was a hand or something. And, you know, they just, you know, obviously they did the smart thing and shut him down. But, yeah, he only ended up making 12 starts this year. You know, and he is only 24, so it's not, life or death that he make 30 starts at this point, especially where. But, yeah, you know, he's a guy, you know, the White Sox seem to have really good luck developing pitchers. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can, you know, kind of do that with him and if he'll come along. You know, like Chris Sale was brought through their system very quickly, and obviously it didn't bother him. So, you wonder if Rodon can be a guy in that mold. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how you know, if it's worth drafting pitching that early.
Right.
Oh, all right, look at that. The hour went away already. It just seems to go so fast. But, hey, yeah, don't worry. Stu's going to come back tomorrow. One more day he's going to fill in for Dan. So meet us back here. Remember, it's 5 o'clock. You know, Stu's nice enough to help us out, so we accommodate his schedule. We'll be back here at 5 o'clock tomorrow to do this all again. You know what to do while we're gone, though. SportsTimeRadio.com. Look for that new blog tomorrow morning. Link over to the Facebook page. Give that a like. Don't forget the Twitter feed at SportsTimeRadio. And, you know, we always appreciate you coming on and listening to us live. But don't forget, you can find the podcast anytime you want at TuneIn.com.